Greetings. This is James Gilman with As You Wish Talk Radio, broadcasting live from the Yosemite Ranch, otherwise known as UFON Paranormal Central. We've had some interesting things happen. We've had to move my whole studio. We had some, with the snowstorms we've had and all the other problems, we've got about 4 feet of snow dumping on us and 9 foot drifts on the back of the house. And it seems to have taken out our lines out to the usual studio. So we're in a frenzy here getting the studio moved and everything up and online, and had a computer crash. But luckily we're back on the line. Little advice, when you hit those conspiracy theory websites and people send you those links, sometimes they have a little toy there waiting for you, which is what we've experienced quite a bit. But anyway, tonight's guest, we've got Randy Masters, which is probably one of the most extraordinary people that I know concerning the information concerning sound and vibrational healing and music. And there's so many things. I could go on forever and ever, but I really want to just introduce Randy and bring him on the show. Randy, are you with us?
Oh, thank you very much, James. I'm happy to be here.
Oh, glad to have you on the show. Now, you've taught all kinds of music and sound theory at several colleges, haven't you?
Yes, I started teaching music about 1967.
Mm-hmm.
I taught when I was a senior in high school, and then I went to the university, and then in my senior year at the university, I started teaching, and I taught for 17 years in UC Santa Cruz, and then I taught at San Jose State and also some other junior colleges simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
And all kinds of music, jazz music, arranging, songwriting, theory, harmony, all of those different types of aspects.
Now,
and gradually over the years, the more cosmic things began to creep into the classes. And that was
now, are they welcoming the more cosmic understanding of sound in the university levels?
Very little, to my awareness. I left the university scene in 1989, so mm-hmm. a lot has transpired since that time.
Yeah.
And not really. You know, you get some of the interesting things through sound physics and the science of sound area. But primarily there's a lot of things that they don't study, even at the PhD level. They're not even aware of it.
Uh-huh.
It's very much not at all with really what's going on in music. There are specialties in different areas and wonderful specialists all over the world teaching, but the main university system is really not up to date. So, you know, I just felt I had to leave that system because
okay.
it was not going to really embrace being contemporary.
Uh-huh.
In other words, it's, in a way, there's aspects of the intellect that people admire, but some of the aspects of the intellect actually get in the way to being plugged into the true stream of the consciousness.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I run across this quite often, I'm sure you do too, is people will say, well, that's not taught, you know, in college. Where's the science behind that? And things, you know, they go into that scientism thing, you know, just with the UFO field too. I said, to my knowledge, you know, they talk about this Harvard guy and that, and I said, they don't teach UFO in college. You know, they don't teach you anything about it. They don't even acknowledge they exist. So how can the guy be an expert on anything when there's really no class or teaching, you know, concerning that?
Well, I had a head of a music department at a university that I taught at who wasn't there when I had taught there.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to teach some music of the spheres. One of the classes was the secret side of music history, and the other one had to do with the music of the spheres. And I was actually going to offer this through an extension program. And it went out to about 100,000 people, and the music department had to approve it for credit, and somehow it got around that process, or got left out. So they called in the head of the department, extension, and myself, and it was very much like being in front of the Inquisition. They were telling me, well, you don't really talk about these things in public, and fellow, now this is a published person in the high PhD levels, the head of a music department. He says, well, chakras don't exist. And I said, well, sure they do. By the way, I have scientific photos of them. You want to see it? And I reached down in a box and pulled it out. So every other question, when one question would be like, we don't do these things, I'm going to make sure that you don't do this, almost like a pope making sure that some bishop didn't go out there and teach the real stuff.
Uh-huh.
And then he'd say, well, have you read this book? And it's a very esoteric book. And I go, yeah, by the way, I really like that book. And then the next question would be, well, we can't talk about this. So they threatened to shut the extension program down if I taught the class, and we ended up having to cancel it. And to me, that was a metaphor for the sinking ship, like a sinking Titanic of the university system.
Yeah, it's definitely missing the boat with all the... It seems like you can get a lot more knowledge and just going down and getting the What the Bleep video and a few others out there, you can greatly surpass 10 years of university experience just by, you know, really getting into what's out there on the net almost.
Well, I had a good time in the university, and I taught lots of interdisciplinary studies, and I was one who, if somebody studied biology and music, they'd send it to me, and I'd help put their studies together. Uh-huh. And creative things, you know, world music, jazz music, popular, all of those things were really fun, and I had a great time. But once it started getting into this other area, it was quite a different story. And they're certainly not leading the way. And you look at what is the nature of education, and what should be educated, and what could be taught, and the things that are guarded, and the whole nature of the ivory tower, and what that means. If someone gets caught in the intellect and cuts off their heart and is not in tune with the higher wisdom of the heart that surpasses the intellect.
Uh-huh.
And I felt all of those areas needed to be bridged and brought out in terms of, if this is supposed to be the highest in the nation for education, then it needs to really embrace truth. And actually, it gets down to what is the greatest fear that they have. And I think the greatest fear they have is the fear of truth.
You know, sometimes I think one of their greatest fears is somebody having a greater truth than them and usurping their position or their authority.
Well, would that be a greater truth or just a different belief system?
Yeah, or somebody's gone outside their box or beyond the standard curriculum. And I've noticed it with myself, you know, I get way outside the box, you know, but I stay grounded when I do it. And I find out... let's say, in one of the fields I deal with ufology in a way, there's a lot of people that just want to stick to the nuts and bolts, and that's it. But, you know, you can only measure less than 1% of the universe that we live in, and there's another 99% out there, and all these other planes and dimensions and universes, and it just goes on and on and on to infinity. But it's amazing how these people just want to maintain and confine you to that 1%, and it's probably the same in the music field as well.
Oh, yeah, actually it is. It's interesting. Even though there's freedoms in music and people admire it, there's a lot of other challenges in mm-hmm. really getting into, well, what do these composers really know? And
yeah.
How does music really tick? And what I stand for is about how does the universe work? What are the laws of creation? How does sound really work in the universe? What's the truth about sound, light, color, sacred geometry, shape, architecture, and representing that. And to me, teaching that on this earth is what we need to become galactic citizens,
uh-huh.
and even to keep up with some of the advances of the past that surpassed where we are now.
So, I agree. I think music, to me, music is for the heart and soul. But once you have the wisdom and really understand music, you can see that you can affect the heart and the soul through frequencies, which what you seem to have a lot of expertise in.
That's really what I focused on. So after years of performing career in 1998, I took a break from that, put my instruments away for performing, and just concentrated on this research of bringing the future and ancient research out and looking for the formats that could make a difference in helping consciousness and clearing up things on the planet, both bringing joy and beauty, but also raising the vibratory field of the universal life field through the proper relationships of sound and light and color and shape and volume and space and rooms. And the way all of those integrate together, to me, is the future of this. So I needed to stop the busyness of all the rehearsing and playing and delve deeper into that, which I have done so much that I haven't gotten back to the gig since.
I've got a wonderful conference building you can come up and tune up and have fun with. It's already has some amazing energies. There's wall-to-wall light spheres and orbs inside this conference building. And even, in the lower levels of it, we see these things, these orbs coming right through cement walls, you know, metal beams, just passing right on through them like nothing happened. And it seems that one of the things that attract these light spheres more than anything is music and people enjoying having fun and coming together in unity.
Mm. Have you noticed any patterns of or any particular combinations that would attract the spheres when sound is being played more than others?
You know, I've seen a lot of different ones. There was a guy here that played a didgeridoo, and he was, while he was playing his didgeridoo, I took a picture of him, and all these light spheres were hanging around just the outside, in the very bottom of his didgeridoo, where the sound was, tone was coming out. And I've also seen not just the lower frequencies, but drumming, and then flutes and the higher frequencies bring them as, in as well.
Rhythm as well as melodies and such?
Exactly. It's what I see is the music has a lot to do with it, but it also it has a lot to do with consciousness, and the music actually unifies people and creates a, you know, a cohesive consciousness, you might say, that that draws these beings.
Well, there's a lot of realms to explore in this that have been hidden, and as we show that our heart can lead the way in using sound in an intelligent and loving and way that only fosters goodness and raises the frequency, I think we'll be given more and more of the keys of how to really do things with it beyond entertaining it, which doesn't exclude entertaining and joy and fun in it, but it will have the higher matrix of thought, as is often said, accompanying the way those sounds are put together. And those are the different realms that I'm looking at. What combinations, what tonal combinations, timbres of instruments combinations, particular rhythms, what wisdoms of different cultures are relevant for producing different types of effects.
Mm-hmm. Now each we were talking about the chakras earlier, each chakra seems to have a tone or a frequency, and I know you've developed some tuning forks and some other things that that are actually attuned to each chakra, am I correct?
Yes. And over the years, I've found a lot of different chakra systems that have been used to varying degrees of success, depending on attunements. One chakra system that's the most common out there associates colors with the chakras, and associates musical notes with those colors, but it's based on pigment, which a lot of the books don't acknowledge that that's what it is. Whenever they associate the note, the musical note of C, or frequencies that we would call a C note, with red, that's the pigment scale. And that's not based on light directly, that's based on pigment.
Uh-huh.
And then it progresses up through the rainbow, through the chakras. And certainly, those colors influence the different regions of the body where the chakra vortexes come into the body. But in my experience, none of the chakras are any of those colors. They're all the same color, which is an electric blue-white light that I've seen. That it's like a cobalt blue with an intense spiritual white, almost silvery light in it.
Uh-huh.
And so they all have that color, but that doesn't rule out the fact that colors affect different regions of the body, whether it's in clothes you wear, colors shining on the body, foods you eat. You know, certain particular colors are associated with empowering different organs and such. And that all holds up. But the tonal relationships have quite a bit of variety. The other scale that also is associated with colors, when you take the wavelengths of color, divide them into the speed of light in like angstroms per second or nanometers per second, you get a very high frequency way up in the trillions of hertz. And then by dividing by two a number of times, you can bring it down in octaves into our audible range. And when you do that, the notes in the G to G sharp area, some F sharps, are all in the region for red. So basically, the pigment is located a fifth below light, like a ratio of 3 over 2, a perfect fifth below light. So if you had a 396 G frequency, you would have a 264 C frequency, and that for instance. So then you could actually run those two systems together at the same time, which I often do.
Uh-huh.
Now, that's two systems. And then the Tibetan system that doesn't use color at all, even though you could still associate colors with the notes, basically moves up the seven main chakras of the body using the white keys of the piano, starting on A for the root chakra. So you would move up a scale that's called the Aeolian mode or the natural minor scale. A C major scale starting on A with the root chakra, B for the second, C for the solar plexus, ending up with a G at the crown chakra. And that's a system that the Tibetans use with Tibetan bells. And I've used that same system from time to time with tuning forks instead of the bells. That works really great. And now there's three systems I've described so far. Pigment, and then light directly, which creates the red for the G note association. And then with light, you have a green for the C instead of a red for the C note. And then the Tibetan system, starting with A at the root chakra, moving up the body. And then Christopher Hills did some work with some special Turing pendulums that measured energies that came out of the body into chakra areas in certain centimeter wavelengths. So what I also did is I took all of those measurements and converted those into sound by dividing centimeters into the speed of light in centimeters per second. And that's how I did it. It's a real simple scientific principle. And then I have a set of about 10 either tuning forks or sound tubes or whatever I want tuned to these particular electromagnetic vortex spins that they measured. And nobody had ever done anything with that. So after Christopher passed away, his wife, Penny Slinger Hills, did a video on the chakras. And so I got these particular sound tools that I designed to what her husband had done, and some work with some, I believe, some French scientists as well that did this type of measuring. Now, that's very unique in itself, a completely different association of notes to chakras than all of the other systems that are noted in any book whatsoever. And now, he hadn't taken it into sound. All he did were the measurements.
Yeah. Now, have you ever... This has always been one of my dreams, and somebody may have already come up with it, I don't know, but, you know, there's a lot of, like you were saying, a lot of different beliefs concerning this system, but I always felt if you got the right tone and the right frequency for each chakra and the right color, and you set up a device or a chair where you'd sit in this chair and all up and down the spine, you could, like, monitor these or turn them up or down or even measure the frequencies in each chakra. I know Marcel Vogel had something. Unfortunately, he, you know, no longer with us, but he seemed to have a device that could measure the energy within each chakra, and he died right after that.
Yeah, there are some devices that can measure chakras. There's a Japanese researcher that developed a device that can measure the electrical voltage in the chakras. And so you can certainly work with that and see what notes influence that, increase the electron spins and such. Bob Dredge has a molecular emission scanner that you can point at the body and actually take pictures of the chakra. And as you work on a person, you can see on the computer screen the changes in the chakra taking place in real time. It's called a scanner, molecular emission scanner. It's a very fascinating device that...
Yeah.
Absolutely makes MRI devices obsolete, because Bob's device is absolutely not invasive in any way. It's fascinating. I've watched this and done some work with him with that. So there's several different kinds of interesting scientific technologies that are at least on the high end of a third dimensional science, but bring in scalar waves and other kinds of aspects that go beyond the third dimension that can give you useful information about chakras and how they feed into the body and into the spine, into the nervous system, into the meridians. You could do the same thing in measuring all the meridians. And once we can get all these measuring devices together with the sounds, we can do a lot of experiments to see which combination of tones are producing what kind of effects and whether... this is something that's changing for a person, because I've often done work with people using different systems, and they got wonderful results. And one of the things that I teach is to try all the different notes of, like, in a chromatic scale, you might say, for each chakra, and I view it that each note affects a different dimensions of the chakra. Not like there's just one fundamental tone that addresses that chakra for everybody, but that note might be something that addresses a certain dimensional aspect. And then beyond that, we have to get into quality and not become obsessed with the measurements of quantity in order to really get the whole system working and singing.
Is there has anybody come up with an invention, I was talking about earlier, maybe you'd be sitting in a chair and they'd have a pole that would be right in front of you, and it would be aligned with each chakra going up and down, and then it would send out both a harmonic and a color, maybe even a scalar wave, who knows. And it would probably create, you know, a phenomenal healing once we understood and got the frequencies correct. It would balance us out, and you know, you could do all kinds of things with something like that.
I've seen and worked with some different light devices that can go over the body, so you could lay on your back facing it, or you could lay on your stomach, and it could tone the whole spine with different colors. And then tuning forks are used to work on the body in combination with the light shining on the body with different types of light sources. If you know, certainly the developing work with LEDs is very important in that kind of area, and other types of light sources. And there are certain things going on with lasers, but one has to be very careful due to the potency of lasers and how they're used. But I have seen a number of things. Fred Bell, when he was taken up on Pleiadian ships, they sat him in a chair and broadcast the frequencies of hydrogen and the colors of hydrogen and sounds to him. And I've been doing some work with all of the different spectral lines of hydrogen, and I've made some different chimes and bells and tuning forks tuned to the wavelengths of hydrogen in the visible spectrum converted into sound. And it's very powerful, the effects that are happening. Because I see that setting the hydrogen molecule in the body is really one of the primary things that affects every living every living life form, centers around hydrogen. So that's something that's going on right now that I'm very excited about.
Well, I'd love to find out more about that, and you know, we'll definitely see if we can get you up here to do a workshop with and bring a lot of your toys up here. And
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we can play with them with the light spheres and also with some of the guests that are here.
Well, I would think that, you know, in using these hydrogen tones, that they'll talk to all the different aspects of nature, the insects, the birds, humans, animals, mammals, reptiles, everything, because that is the fundamental element that we all connect with as the building unit, like the way the tetrahedron is in geometry as a fundamental building unit. The hydrogen element is also that. So I've spent years analyzing that and looking at these wavelengths and working with it. So that, to me, is something that's at the core of sound and light.
Now, if there's some kind of... Now, how does hydrogen... I know there's a transfer, and almost all of our energy transfer has to do with hydrogen, but how does that affect the body, and how would the tones affect the hydrogen, you know, to bring about different results in the body?
Well, you know, I'm still looking at how we get different kinds of results and what are the adjustments that are made in the total field, in the space where this is being worked with the different individuals and such, plant forms, you name it. But basically, the hydrogen molecule goes through a 360-degree rotation throughout the day. So when the sun comes up in the morning, it's polarized to red. When the sun sets, it's polarized to violet. And then it goes from sunset then through the night all the way up till sunrise where it's red again. It pivots on green, and there's no green wavelengths of hydrogen at all, visible lines. But if you add particular ones of red and green, there's one red hydrogen line that's also in the rainbow when it comes through a quartz prism, and a particular violet line of hydrogen. You add those two together and divide it by two, you get a green. And so that forms the arithmetic mean of the red and the violet. Red plus violet divided by 2 equals green is the basic formula.
Okay.
So I use that, and I made tuning forks and tubes and various things. And the question now is, given those notes and how impeccable the mathematics of the notes are, which is really astounding and very tight, how do you work with it besides singing it, playing it, sounding in the environment? You know, with tuning forks, you can put it on specific points on the body. Then we look at what happens during the day in listening to these tones. As we move through the day, this molecule is changing, so hydrogen is in a different place, continually moving, so it's not stationary. And when people get jet lag, basically what's happened is they've gotten out of sync with the hydrogen molecule for their own biorhythm. That's really the fundamental thing that's going on there.
And you could probably put them right back in sync once you...
So then the question is, how? Do they listen to these tones in a certain octave and sing them? Would that do it? Do you have to listen to them for a certain amount of time? You can see we have to actually do some pretty rigorous experiments to find out how, if somebody had jet lag, how swiftly could they be put back in balance with the hydrogen molecule using these sounds? And then, of course, that leads to the next part, which is combining the sound with the light together, which is something that I'm working on.
Does that correspond with the note that we would all be aware of?
Yes, they do. The red line of the red orange line of hydrogen is basically like an A flat or a G sharp, and this particular violet one that's in phi ratio with it, 1.6 or 8 over 5, a musical phi ratio that I selected to work this out, is an E or an F flat. You can spell it different ways. And then what's interesting then is the green becomes a C, and its frequency is 255.9 something, that basically rounds up to 256, creating the famous middle C that's just a multiple of 2 hertz. And when I saw that, I got an insight into the profoundness of C notes relating to multiples of 2 hertz that I thought was more for convenience and for analysis. But how I got that through this hydrogen project, analyzing the tones, shows me that there's a greater wisdom in that particular C note, which and a lot of the body responds to that C note. It's all throughout the spine, octaves of 256C, like 64 notes at the base of the spine and 1,024 typically at the top of the spine. Those are all multiples of 2 hertz. And what I'm working with a green laser now that is very close to the wavelength of that particular frequency. And eventually I want to get ones that are 100% spot on.
Yeah, the green light seems to be, whenever people experience healings, you know, you always see this green light associated with it, or either that or an ultraviolet blue and the green together.
The blue fits in because that's a very important color in a lot of different ways, because when you look in an electron microscope at the cells, they are an electric blue-white color. And I feel that that is why we have expressions like out of the blue, beyond the blue horizon, because this is a blue universe that centers around that blue color. And the hydrogen blue, you get 486 nanometers. It's also in the rainbow. It's a cyan blue that hydrogen produces. And that same number is one of the theoretical measurements for the height of the pyramid in feet, 486 feet, if you put a capstone on it and measured it from a certain place. Because there's a lot of hydrogen numbers in the measurements of the pyramid. I look at one level of the pyramid as basically a textbook on the periodic table.
That's amazing what they built into that pyramid.
Yeah.
The ultraviolet blue, or the some people call it the blue body or the etheric body, as I was taught, seems to be where the perfect pattern is, the perfect blueprint, you know, for healing. And if we could access that and bring that into the physical, it seems like most of our problems would seem to go away as far as physical problems.
And even in the word, when you said blueprint, they didn't say orange print, red print, or some other thing. You know, it's the clues are there.
Yeah, you know, I never really thought about that. That is so so interesting and accurate, too, the blueprint. You know?
Why is that? And Shawnee, you know, West, that teaches the white time healing, who's a UFO contactee. She teaches all over the world. She's from Sweden. Says that this universe that we're in is called the blue universe, and has said a lot of things about that blue color. And I studied with a healer, Bob Rasmussen, for about 25 years, who would ignite that color, would ignite the nucleus of the cells in people, and then that's when the healing would take place. Once the pilot lights and the cells lit up, they knew what to heal, and automatically mental, emotional, physical, or spiritual, or all four, any combination, could take place once there was enough of those lights that were really turned on in a person. And that's a primary mode of healing that I studied for years and years. And I do that also when I use tuning forks. There's a certain breathing technique that you can use to ignite that energy.
It all seems to be pointing in that direction. A lot of the studies I've gotten involved with, they all seem to talk about this blue realm. And you know, when you look at the Earth from space, it's got this beautiful blue energy field around it.
Yeah,
you know,
the same
some people
thing.
Go, well, that's just oxygen, but I think there's a lot more to it than just
no,
oxygen.
It's not just, you know, it's not just oxygen. I think it's really crucial to the understanding. Have you noticed that in pictures of UFOs where you see this electric blue outline around it?
Oh, yeah. We have some with bright violet, that intense violet light, like a, and then we have some with the purple light, a violet light, and the intense blue around it both. We have all three of those going on. And we've actually filmed some with pink energy and green energy both. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, I pay attention to the ends of the spectrum, the far infrared area, and then into the warming colors of the reds, oranges, yellows and pinks, and that whole warming side. Then blue is the green is the neutral. And then we look at the cooling side with the blues through blue, violet, and indigo up through violet and purple and like that. And in the Balmer lines of hydrogen, there's 34. 31 of the lines are all violet, producing, when you convert it to sound, F-sharp notes. So there's 31 different F-sharps, you might say, produced from the spectral lines of hydrogen.
Now F-sharp has something to do with the pyramids as well, doesn't it?
Well, it shows up there. It shows up all around the world. I found one particular one that is an F-sharp that's a glow that comes off of rainforests as a kind of a fundamental hum of the rainforests. Don Tolman did some research. He developed these crystal bowls called white stone carillons based on research from the Egyptian times when they actually made crystal bowls back in the ancient Egyptian times.
Huh.
And these are sort of egg-shaped bowls that he has. And he called it in the key of David. And based on research, that was the key of F-sharp. So most of these bowls he made are various F-sharp, and some of them kind of get up into G, but mostly hovering around an F-sharp. So there is some significance around F-sharp. What I just said about hydrogen shows you, 31 out of 34 spectral lines being F-sharps is very significant from the fundamental element. Does that make sense?
Oh, definitely, yes. It seems like, any kind of music with a lot of those tones in it would be definitely uplifting and healing.
I haven't finished the work on the periodic table with this, but when I went to helium, I found that all of the spectral lines of helium except one were octaves or double octaves of hydrogen lines. Every single one.
Wow.
So, you know, of course, as we get into other elements, like iron has like 1,000 spectral lines, so it's a lot, it gets more and more complicated in certain ways.
Uh-huh.
But I believe there's some clues there for us to look at in what doing things around the F-sharps. A lot of the Chinese gongs and were developed around pentatonic scales built around an F-sharp note, for instance. They knew something in these ancient times. They could hear these tones in the way of hearing the music of the spheres, and they tuned them. And they tuned them accurately. Now the question is, do we use the ancient tone, or is there a new phase shift that the note is moving to that addresses where we're going and where we are, helps us get from where we are to where we're going, but is not exactly the note that was used in ancient times to get people from where they were to where they were going. And I'm always combining the future information with the ancient information and looking for that wisdom.
It definitely seems that we've moved the entire planet. It seems to be shifting and going up into a higher frequency. So that does seem to affect the frequencies that we're using, the ancient tones, you might say.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe some of these ancient tones that had effects will not have the same effects they had. But I also believe that there are time codes where some of the ancient things are designed to affect us now, and they were actually put into place to have their maximum effect in this time, not just 10,000 or 5,000 or however many thousand years ago.
Yeah, I have I play a Native American flute. I have this one I just love, and I think it's an F sharp. I'm not sure, but when I'm playing it and I play this one song, and when I hit the mid-range on it, there's a shift that goes, and you can feel the shift in the room, and you get this jolt of energy that comes right down your spine when you hit this note and hold it, and then you pop off it. And as soon as you hit that note, it almost invokes an energy that people who are sensitive can really feel it.
Does this happen no matter what room you're playing in?
Pretty much. Well, I haven't played it. I haven't tried it in a lot of different rooms, but it's quite interesting. And I've had other people, without telling them, I just said, I'm going to play this song, and you let me know when you feel it, when you feel an energy shift happen. And every time when I hit that one note, bam, you know, the shift comes in.
Well, it'd be good to check out the frequency and find out what general range and what specific frequency that is.
Yeah, I have no. That's beyond me, and that's something.
Yeah, that's easy to do. Very easy to measure that, and then pick. I'd like to look at that, and then I could see what that note might be also related to. What zone is it in, and why that particular frequency might have some auspicious characteristic to it.
Yeah, it opens a gate or an energy gate or a door or something, but
yeah.
It's, you can definitely feel it. And I've had quite a few people that are sensitive, and even people that aren't so sensitive also felt it. They just felt a shift happen when we hit that note.
Well, the ancient temples were designed where architecture, space, shape, tone, color, and light all were synchronized, both for open-air temples, where a lot of them were open-air temples that didn't have a roof. So this acoustic effect also happened in the open spaces. It didn't have to happen only in a closed-in acoustical environment. And it also happened in the acoustic environments. There's a lot of coves and niches in the pyramids and the temples in Egypt that you could stand in and sit in and tone in, where incredible acoustic effects take place, where the key to the temple were sound keys, and how it interacted both with the person, the people there, and with the environment and the kind of resonances that they set up. And so I've been studying a lot of those different resonances of sacred places and to get insights into what those resonances are about. Some of them relate to brainwave frequencies of the planet, and others relate to different things. But I note each one, and I do a lot of analysis of it, trying to discover what can we do. How can we also take the temple to the people? For people who can't go to that temple, what can we do to bring the temple to the people by recreating certain types of acoustics and environments? And also, how do we bring the temple out in the people? In other words, the temple's inside you, and with the right conditions and the right environment, the temple that's in you would be evoked and brought out. So maybe this particular note on your flute is helping to unlock that key that brings that out in people.
Yeah, it's a song that was taught to me a long time ago, and we used to use it to open up the sweat lodge. And whenever I played it either in the sweat lodge or if I played it in the house, wherever I play it, it seems to have this strange opening that just pops things wide open. And actually, I think I was playing it in one of the DVDs. I'm not sure.
Does it take the whole melody to achieve this effect, or is it even a sustained tone on certain notes? How does that work?
You know, I don't know, but it starts out on a real low note, and then it moves up, and then when it hits that high note, it just, boom, you know, everything pops. So it does go from a lower scale on up, and it's right in the mid area there where it really kicks on.
Do you have to sort of work your way from the lows to the high to achieve the effect, or could you come right in with a high note?
You know, I haven't tried that, but I have a feeling that just the high note alone will do it, just because the resonance of that.
Well, I think it's good to look at all those different things to see, is there a protocol in order to evoke the right qualities? Or can you just, like, flip on a light switch, just hit that note, and bingo, you're slam dunk, you're right there.
Yeah, yeah.
And not all slam dunks are comfortable for people. Maybe part of it is warming up and kind of getting with the program and riding the wave and then letting it take you there. I mean, these are different aspects of how sound is used. Sometimes there's something that's just a single note when exposed to that note at a certain volume, especially in intensity, and tone color or timbre.
Uh-huh.
That's a really important part. Like if you had the same flute, is yours wooden?
Yes, yes.
But let's say you had another one that was ceramic and another one that was metal, and yet they were all tuned the same, but the tone qualities were different. Do you follow?
Uh-huh.
And a big part of sound healing has to do with the timbre.
Yeah.
And what overtones are in that timbre in order to produce particular effects that are beyond just the fundamental note. That could be done even with a sine wave generator or an electronic tone generator that might not have any kind of a beautiful tone. In fact, might be a note that's not appealing to listen to, but the frequency is correct. But it's missing the timbral qualities necessary to open the key to the dislike. The key, part of the key might be the fundamental tone, but the rest of the key is what overtones are then coming off of that fundamental that refine the key so it really fits the lock. That's why I feel that if certain individuals, when they go to particular sacred sites, they have encoded into their being certain harmonic combination that can't be faked by anybody else. And when those beings sound and tone, particular keys open up that wouldn't happen if somebody else just tried to sound the same note, because they don't have the right blueprint in the total harmonic spectrum.
What about drums? I mean, I love drumming, and I just got a big ceremonial drum. It's a monster, and it vibrates the whole house, basically. I really love playing that drum.
But there's a number of things that happen with different kinds of drums from around the world where people really had mastery of understanding the drum. There's the size of the drum is one thing, and how deep the tones are, how high they are. There's also what type of material the drums are made from. For instance, in a lot of the African drum making is they would go out and find a tree and talk to that tree spirit and get permission to make the drum, and then the whole drum is carved from one tree, not separate pieces that are put together to create the shape, but from one trunk of the tree. And, of course, they've interacted with the spirit in the tree and invoke that, and including the if they have any drum mallets that they're using to play the drums, like you see a lot of African drums are played with particular wooden mallets that are wrapped with leather and different things. And so the spirit in the wood and the spirit in the leather and the spirit in the material and the invoking and getting the permission of that other realm, however you want to describe that spirit realm, plus the hides, if there are hides from animals that are used, are all part of the consciousness of that drum. And when the shaman work with that, they understand those qualities different than if they just gave the same drum to somebody who's a wonderful percussionist. So say they're masterful with rhythm and really technically together, but they haven't made that connection in their playing with these spirits. There's a different realm involved here when the drum and the spirits are unified together, and all the materials in the drum, all and their spirit is being acknowledged, and it's alive. So the drum is very alive. That's why they call them a lot of times the thunder drum. They a lot of times invoke the thunder spirits in different cultures, especially in Africa and Brazil and in different places. I've done a lot of work with that because I played with groups from Africa. And I played with the National Group of Ghana, Hedjoli Sounds, for 15 years. And so a lot of things going on with the drums and the drumming.
I've seen people drum before, and you can tell they're just blissed out when they're doing it, and they're in a trance or whatever, and they're just really going at it, and it seems like the sound is a carrier of their consciousness.
And it also drives their consciousness into the shamanic states. If you want to take somebody into on a shamanic journey with a drum, if you beat the drum in certain rhythms fast enough, that create theta brain states, in a matter of 20 minutes, they can go so deep into that they leave their body and go on a shamanic journey, and you can actually guide the whole journey through the drumming. I have friends that do that using I Ching drum patterns, where they're actually drumming the different hexagrams and trigrams out of the I Ching.
Now, if Now, if somebody, let's say, you know, we know we're all connected in consciousness and we're all in this universal field or unified field, and it seems like as somebody's drumming and he goes into that state or whatever, he's actually going to affect everybody around him, and they're going to have the opportunity to, you know, get that contact high or attuned to that same state.
Yeah, there's an entrainment that gets projected,
mm-hmm.
or can get projected. And that also depends upon the consciousness of the shamanic performer. I'm denoting the difference between a shamanic performer and somebody who's maybe just good with drums.
Yes, yes. I mean, I've seen people out there doing it just strictly from an ego, you know, base, and it was kind of annoying.
Mm-hmm.
It was irritating. And it wasn't that the drumming wasn't good and their technique wasn't good. It was something else there that was just very irritating, and they were coming at it from the ego and kind of, you know, doing the see me, dig me thing, you know. I'm a Rasta drummer, you know, or whatever. And then there's, you know, and then there's other people that are real, that's really who they are, and they're really in the right spirit, and they're projecting it out more as a service, and they really don't care about the self-aggrandizement or anything. And it seems like those are the ones that create the best effect.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a lot of respect in the different indigenous cultures for exactly how those drums really function,
uh-huh.
and what they can do. But one of the keys to it is that the fast drum patterns that are repetitive, that produce primarily theta brainwaves,
uh-huh.
is what takes people on the shamanic journey with drumming into a, which could be a beneficial trance, in other words, versus a trance like in voodoo ceremonies where they're driving the spirit out of the body, inviting another spirit to inhabit the body, and using the drumming to maintain the field for the presence of another kind of entity in that person.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's taking it to the negative side of the aspect of trance versus the beneficial shamanic journey where but one connects with their guides and the power animals and such like that through specific kinds of drumming, specific kinds of rhythms. And the heartbeat and various things, aspects of the physiology of the body can be regulated by the different rhythms that you play.
All
especially
right.
if it's sustained for a period of time.
Mm-hmm.
That 20-minute realm is pretty common. It's not that common that only a couple minutes of listening to the drum do most people go to that deep state.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a little while to go into the sympathetic resonance and let go of things, and then they can be held in that state as long as the drumming is contained and continued.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I've got a lot to learn in that area. I mean, I know several different beats on the big drum that I play, and some of the faster beats actually, like you're saying, do invoke a different state of consciousness or a different state, trance state, whatever you want to call them.
Yeah. I have friends who take people through professional shamanic journeys, and they've done work in hospitals and such,
uh-huh.
And especially doing the I Ching patterns, and those are very profound because all those I Ching patterns link up with the DNA, and you can drum them. And there's different ways to drum different ones going on at the same time,
uh-huh.
in succession. And then it's the speed that you drum them at can also take people into these shamanic states. And when they go there, a lot of times profound healings can happen because they've connected with, let's say, power animals or their guides on a higher level that they need to connect with to find out what's going on with them. And then they resolve their own situation with the healer within them that's evoked in this shamanic journey.
Uh-huh. It is amazing how when you get into those other realms, it's basically all symbols and images it's not, you know, the words and the semantics don't really make much difference there.
I'm sure that one could drum, for instance, the archetype signature of ayahuasca or something like that. You could actually drum it without the substance and
uh-huh.
have a, if that was desired, for instance, I'm just using this as an example, not necessarily advocating it, but just using it as an example,
uh-huh.
that the rhythm patterns, if they truly capture the hologram and the signature of something, can be conveyed through the sound.
You know, if I go into a room where there's people doing drugs or whatever else, I get stoned, or I get that contact high, And I walk out of there going, what the heck happened? I didn't take anything. Where did this come from? And, you know, I can see how the group consciousness, whatever's going on there, if you are really sensitive and you walk into that room, you automatically entrain to it.
Mm-hmm. It's a field effect.
Yeah, that's why I don't hit the bars too often. You know,
yeah.
I do all I can to stay out of them.
Well, in a lot of the different indigenous cultures, they maintain that whole field effect by what they chant, the rhythms they play, mm-hmm. how they made the drums, if they're using drums, in addition to how they're using their voice, the syllables and the phonetic sounds that they sing in the different languages evoke different overtones and undertones that could take people into completely different dimensional realms.
Uh-huh. You know, one of the things I've done here at the ranch, get people I have that come to the ranch and the speakers, one of my prerequisites is that they're coming from the heart. They may not have it all down or be perfect or whatever, but if I get a good frequency, a good feeling from them, and they're coming from the heart, those that, you know, the type of people I bring here,
mm-hmm.
and it already had an amazing frequency here. It's like a vortex, but it just keeps building. It gets stronger and stronger, you know, and there is a lot to say about maintaining a frequency.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Some of the ancient sites helped do that by the way the architecture was set up to maintain the field, everything from standing stones to obelisks to buildings and structures and geometry and geomancy of the land,
yeah.
the kinds of trees and the frequencies that those trees and plants, there's a number of different ways that the whole field is created, and then how that field is maintained, and there's ways that the sound helps maintain the field. The way the insects, for instance, when birds sing to plants early in the morning, they start evoking different processes in the plants. They literally wake up the processes through sound in the plants.
Mm-hmm.
And then another wave of birds will come, and they have a different song, and that different song opens up another field. So that field is maintained through sound, part of the sound of the bees, you know, and how they interact with the flowers and plants and such. The sound is incredible. When certain human instruments of a mechanical nature start overriding an environment, then they start throwing off the natural balance of nature's sounds. Where in nature, all the sounds get along together. In all of the jungle areas and such, looking at that as a very condensed place, every sound, from the insects to the trees and the wind and the birds and the animals, are all compatible and harmonically. It's a huge symphonic dance going on that maintains the field.
I bet your microwaves really mess that field up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
but so do tractors and
yeah.
buzzsaws and chainsaws. And they completely disturb. All of a sudden, something is introduced that doesn't get along with anything else in the environment.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the opposite of sound healing, but it shows how the wrong use of sound can intrude in the field and upset the balance.
Yeah, I'll be out here in the forest. You know, we've got just a ton of snow here right now, and unfortunately, it brings out the snowmobiles, and all you hear is this whee, you know, like this. You know, you go way back in the forest, you go, oh, I'm all alone. You know, I can just really meditate here and just commune with nature. And then you hear that going, then you hear the chainsaws going, and you know, you go, oh my God, you know, why'd I leave? You know?
Yeah, right.
You know, why'd I go up the forest? It was quieter at home. You know, but
do you hear different sounds in the snow? Are there some different awarenesses of frequency that you get when it's snowing?
You know, everything just gets real quiet to me, and then I start hearing higher frequencies and hums and ringings and things of that nature. It does mm-hmm. seem to have a, in the stillness, there is still an overtone or sound. You know, there's a few birds now and then, but that's about it.
Well, it's the sound between the sounds that's in the stillness is where that music of the spheres occurs.
Uh-huh.
Or one of the key places for the music of the spheres is to go into the silence between the notes.
Yeah.
And that's like in the zero point in the vortex.
Uh-huh.
The sounds are creating a vortex. And then there's this place that's still, and in that stillness is where all those real mysteries are really taking place.
Uh-huh. Yeah, we're running up to the end of the hour here, so what I'd like you to do is give your website and how people can contact you and check out some of the materials that you have, you know, that they might be interested.
Yeah. Well, they can phone me at 831-662-2594 in Aptos area of Santa Cruz, 831-662-2594. Then my website is www.universalsong.net, UniversalSong.net, UniversalSong.net. And I also have sacredwindchimes.com.
Great. And we have both those up on the site as well, so if people want to click on the links, they'll go straight to your websites and contact you. Do you have any events coming up that you might want to talk about?
Yeah, we're going to have a sound healing conference on the 26th, 27th, and 28th of January down in Woodland Hills.
Mm-hmm.
And they want information on that. They can call the Globe Institute in San Francisco at 415-777-2486. There'll be lots of well-known sound healers at that conference. They can also go to www.soundhealingcenter.com, soundhealingcenter.com, and I could see all the different speakers that'll be there. Fred Bell, Don Estes, Jeffrey Thompson, Barbara Hero, Lisa Raffel, David Gibson's putting this on. Quite interesting combination.
Yeah, I'd love to go to that myself. I might be able to get down in that area. You never know.
It'll be at the Marriott, at the Woodland Hills Marriott in Woodland Hills.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, you know, I've got to sign off now. We've run out of time, so I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. It was an awesome interview, and we'll have to have you on again real soon.
Anytime you like. Thanks so much, James. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on.
All right.
All right. This is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio signing off. Have a great evening. Good night.